Israel, Amrim Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil, olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, currently marking its year of dedication. Our dramatic program today, The Builder, written by David Davidson, is the sixth in a series of 13 programs in American Jewish regional history, presented in observance of the 20th year of the Eternal Light.
Our story begins in the ancient German city of Aachen, where once the Emperor Charlemagne held court. That once was a window opening on all the known world of its time. But in the year 1850, an iron grip had closed on Aachen, as on most of Europe. On the walls of the town constantly were posted new decrees. For one young man, there was posted, finally, one decree too many. Standing before the wall to which it had been fixed, and reading words as cold as the wall itself.
Subjects of the kingdom must at once secure for themselves passports of identification, that no person may leave the place wherein he resides without permission of the appropriate police authorities, and that failure to obey such regulations shall be deemed an act of rebellion against his august majesty. And it is further decreed... Good evening, Mother.
Oh, Adolf, here the Sabbath candles are lit for an hour already. Supper is on the table and you
I was walking, Mother, from one end of the town to the other, thinking things over.
What things?
Well, at the city hall today, they put up a new decree.
Oh, I heard. But what is it to do with you? Your father left you a fine cloth factory to run. All you have to think about
is how... All I can think about is that they have put our hands in chains. But this is not the way God meant us to live.
Don't.
He meant our hands to move, to make, to do. He meant us to be builders like himself, he who created the world.
That is true, Adolf,
Mother,
but...
do you remember those words that Father was always reading us from the Bible? 6 days shalt thou labor. And on the seventh shalt thou rest.
Yes, I remember.
And the days of labor, he used to say, are as holy as the days of rest. Well, if we are going to fulfill our duty to the world that God gave us, we must not stop yet. We must...
Yes? What are you trying to say?
Mother, I'd like to go away to another country. One where they believe in the creation, where they still allow it to go on.
America.
Yes. Will you give me your permission, Mother?
On the top shelf in the wardrobe, you'll find the money for the ship.
Oh, Mother.
I've been saving it a long time.
In America, the new arrival was drawn at once to its newest part, the recently admitted state of California. There, to start with, he set up in the tobacco business. But, as always, it was a passion for doing, for building, that drove him, that sent him wandering inquisitively among gold diggings that furrowed the state.
Hey, you there.
Yeah?
You're standing on private property, don't you know that?
Oh, excuse me. I found it so interesting to watch those buckets going down, bringing up the gold ore.
Look, I got this claim staked down as tight as a drum, partner. The one with those roving eyes, you're no good.
Well, you think I'm figuring on jumping your claim, partner? I'm not. I was just thinking that if you don't get some stronger supports down into that digging, you and your men are going to be buried alive someday.
Oh? Engineer, are you?
No, tobacco is my business.
Tobacco? And that makes you so almighty wise about metal mining, you can stand there and tell me how to...
Well, I have been reading a couple of books on the subject.
Books?
Yes, books. It's kind of a habit of mine. In fact, the people I come from have been for a long time called people of the book.
Oh, well, now, that book is one that maybe has its uses. I'll grant you that.
A whole lot of other books that show you the way to get those yellow specks out of the dirt and make them into gold.
Oh, is that so?
Yes. And the trouble is that some of you are in such a hurry to grab your fortunes, don't you think you might be killing the goose that lays the golden egg?
Well, sir, if the books have taught you so all-fired much, why don't you get your own grubstake? Holy smoke, that wall is beginning to slide. Hey, you down there. Every man jack. Cop out of it. Are you with the old boy wall out?
Made it just in time. Say, mister, whatever your name is.
My name is Sutro, Adolph Sutro.
Look, Mr. Sutro, how'd you know that was going to happen?
Well, I know that in mining you've got to build carefully. And even the good Lord didn't try to do a six-day job in one or two.
Tobacco business, you said?
That's right.
Well, why in tarnation is an engineer wasting his time on tobacco?
But Sutro, by this time married and the father of a family, moved slowly in making his decision. It was in 1860 that it came, as one night he brought a guest home.
Leah, this is Mr. Randor. Randor, I'd like you to meet my wife.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Leah, this is going to be a farewell dinner for Mr. Randor. He's leaving tomorrow for Virginia City in Nevada.
Oh, for the Comstock load, you mean, where they're digging out that mountain of silver.
Well, I'm not planning to do any digging myself, ma'am. Let's set up a refinery to melt down all that silver ore on the spot, instead of having to haul it all the way here to San Francisco.
Oh, Virginia City's a terrible trip, I hear, by stagecoach and horse over the Rockies with hostile Indians all the way.
Well, I'm sorry if it alarms you so, Leah, because...
Yes, Adolph.
Well, I was thinking that I might go along and keep Mr. Randor company for a while.
Oh,
see, for a year now, I've been reading all the reports coming back from Virginia City. It seems to me they're using God's earth very badly out there. They're going to kill the earth, maybe themselves, too.
Adolph, are you saying that you, sitting here in San Francisco, know better how to dig up that silver than all those men in Nevada?
Well, I have a few ideas on the subject.
From everything your husband tells me, Mrs. Sutro, my money's on him.
Oh. Well, go on, Adolph. Find out.
In Nevada, he rode endlessly over the great hill of buried silver into which had been dug 100 shafts and galleries. Again and again, he spoke with the working miners as they came up pale and dazed from the depths of the earth.
Well, Mike, how far down did you hit today?
1,100 feet, Mr. Sutro. Still plenty of silver, but it'll soon be impossible for a man to live long enough to get it out.
Why do you say that, Mike?
Well, always hot as a frying pan down there. Getting hotter. Besides the gas fumes.
Yeah, I know.
Fella keeps hungering all day for air.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention all the water that's running around wild inside that mountain. Underground springs, rivers, lakes. We're pumping day and night to keep ahead of it.
And I guess bringing up to the mountain top a weight of water that's almost as much as the silver ore.
Even more, Mr.
Water that could be used down there in the valley to grow food.
I sure wish somebody would come along and figure out a way to keep us miners from either choking to death or drowning.
You know, Mike, I believe there is a way.
Well, Sutro, your name is certainly getting around in these parts.
Why do you say that, Randor?
Well, I was talking today with a federal commissioner who's come visiting from Washington. And he said...
Yes?
Let me start from the beginning. I got it from the commissioner that Mr. Lincoln is getting mighty anxious about these silver mines. He says it's the one thing that's making it possible for the Union to pay the terrible costs of a civil war.
Uh-huh.
Also, it's the one thing that'll keep our credit firm in the Reconstruction days to come.
Well, unfortunately, the way those mines are being worked, they'll be killed off in no time. Everybody's scrabbling for himself, getting into worse trouble, the deeper they go.
It's being said that you have a plan to remedy that, Sutro. By a tunnel?
Yes. Yes, that's right. A tunnel right through the base of the mountain. Connected by shafts with every mine, instead of struggling to bring the ore and the water up, I'd let them both just run down by gravity and out through the tunnel. Also, a tunnel would let fresh air blow into the mine, circulate around naturally.
Well, Sutro, it seems that the fellow from Washington thinks you ought to build that tunnel. From what he's heard, he thinks Congress would be glad to let you have a franchise, because every extra ounce of silver that can be got out of here is going to be a godsend to our economy.
Well, you know, Randor, as I think it over, my own plan, it's going to be a very big job.
Well, Sutro, you're a very big man.
But in searching for financial backing, Sutro ran into immediate opposition.
Well, now, Mr. Sutro, do I gather that the tunnel would be about 4 miles long?
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Lawrence.
A 4-mile tunnel through a mountain chock full of granite. Well, there's never been anything like it.
Well, I've studied it, Mr. Lawrence. I know it can be done.
This plan of yours, it's going to turn all our ideas about mining upside down. It means new methods. New equipment.
Yes, it does, Mr. Lawrence. But unless you help build that tunnel, you'll reach a day when there'll be no silver mines left to work at all.
Sorry, Mr. Sutro.
Mr. Lawrence...
Not a penny.
Instead, Sutro turned to the working miners of the Comstock Lode, calling them to a public meeting at the Opera House.
Yes, who knows better than you? The man with the pickaxes, what goes on inside that mountain? You who work at blazing temperatures and foul air with water up to your waist. And because the future of this country demands that the mines be kept working, I'm asking you to lend me the money to get the tunnel going. As much as you can spare. $5, $10.
On $50,000 subscribed by the miners, Sutro was ready to begin.
Well, here's your pickaxe, Mr. Sutro. The first swipe at that tunnel through the mountain belongs to you.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Here we go.
And another. Mr. Sutro.
Yes,
Mr. Sutro.
Yes, Mike. What?
In case this tunnel fails, you can always make $4 a day as a miner.
Foot by foot, the tunnel went forward. At times, Sutro traveled the world to raise funds. At times, worked, stripped to the waist alongside the diggers. There came a day.
Well, good morning, Mr. Lawrence.
Excuse me for breaking into your office this way, Sutro, but this is critical.
Huh?
The pumps in my mine can't hold the water anymore. We lost 4 men today.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It's spreading to every other mine. It's a wild ocean. What about this tunnel of yours?
I was expecting to bring it up to your mine tomorrow, Mr. Lawrence.
Well, tomorrow there won't be any mine.
Well, then, Mr. Lawrence, today, let's get the dynamite.
All right, men. The fuses are set. Now back, everybody.
Blessed be the Lord, whose hand is in all things.
Mr. Sutro, do you smell that?
I sure do.
Fresh air. The first that ever got into these mines.
Oh, yes. It smells fine, Mike. Now, Mike, I'm going to find Mrs. Sutro and tell her to get ready to leave for San Francisco. I need a long, long rest.
Rest, Mr. Sutro? You wouldn't know how.
Mike was right. For once back in San Francisco, Sutro immediately discovered a new challenge.
Frankly, Sutro, I can think of a dozen better places, better towns to settle down in.
Why do you say that, Randolph?
San Francisco's finished. Everybody says the same.
Finished? The finest seaport in the whole Pacific?
Just have a look out of that window, down there at the docks. All those ships lying tied up, Every week, less moves in and less moves out.
Of course, there's a trade depression on right now, Randall, but trade will boom again.
Well,
and one day San Francisco will be this country's door to the whole Orient. We should be thinking of making it bigger, not of walking out.
Bigger? It's full up already, busting in every seam. Oh, well, except for those sand hills above Ocean Beach.
Yes, those sand hills.
A regular Sahara Desert. Even a camel wouldn't want to get lost there.
Randor, suppose the good Lord had quit the job of creation before it was done. What kind of shape would that have left the world in?
Of all the places to go walking on a windy day.
Oh, but look. The beautiful Pacific, perfect sky.
And these terrible hills blowing sand all over the whole universe. Oh, I have sand in my mouth, Adolph, and sand in my eyes.
Then the thing to do is to tie down those hills.
Tie them down?
Yes, with tough grasses, with a forest of trees. Right here in this desert, we could have a fine new park, a whole new residential section.
Adolph, I know what's driving you, but there must be limits somewhere.
Just one thing. One thing, dear. Water.
What?
Water. To give life to all this sand.
Oh, no. You know the city is always short of water as it is.
Well, then maybe these hills can be made to give up their own water. Remember back at the Comstock Lode, how they ran into those underground rivers?
Yes.
Maybe here, too, if they dig deep enough.
They? What you mean, Adolph, is you.
But yes. Yes, if nobody else will.
Jackson, have you seen this item in today's paper? Adolph Sucro acquires 10% of city's acreage in rehabilitation plan. Maybe we shouldn't be in such a hurry to pull up stakes after all.
Yes, Sutro's example brought new optimism to the city. And from his labors, as he foresaw, came a new residential section and a great park and bathing pavilion, which he presented to the city. But this passion for building took other forms, too. Speaking out in public...
A community is something more than a chaos of strong men, all separately pursuing their own aims, each driving his own mind, thoughtless of how he weakens the common structure. A city is the total of the people who live in it, using themselves and their resources for the common good.
Sutro, you said some very wise things then.
Thank you, Randor.
In fact, some of us think you ought to run for public office.
Oh, heavens, what do I know about politics?
Politics isn't what we're interested in. No, we want someone who can plan this city for the future. It's transportation, docks, industries, a builder, Sutro.
I don't know. It'd be something so new to me.
Sure, but when did that scare you? Now, don't be telling me you're ready for your day of rest yet. We're running you for mayor of San Francisco.
He was elected overwhelmingly, serving a term that took the city to the threshold of the 20th century. Around him, he saw ever-increasing growth, including the million trees he had planted in the sand dunes, which he called...
These million children of my old age.
But the Sabbath, as it were, of this restless builder had not come yet. Looking about his beloved city, its great new docks and industries...
Leanne.
Yes.
What we still need here is another kind of building block so this city can grow in yet another dimension.
Dimension? It has three already?
Yes, well, it still needs that fourth. A dimension to help people build their souls as well as their houses. Leah, I think we'd better make a trip soon to Europe.
Europe? Now, what has that to
do with... You wait, Leah. You wait, and you see.
Once in Europe, he scouted some of its farthest corners, always in search of those building blocks for the fourth dimension of which he so often talked, in the palace of an English duke.
Well, Mr. Sutro, to what do I owe the honor of your call?
Your Grace, I'm told that your family has made its home here since the time of Richard II.
True.
And that while some families have enjoyed collecting jewels or paintings...
Yes, we Sunderlands have collected a different kind of treasure. As you may know, Shakespeare's Tempest was once performed right out there in that garden... under his own direction.
Yes, and he left behind the folio of the play inscribed in his own hand.
Quite true.
Well, if it's not presumptuous to suggest that instead of being locked away in a strong room, it ought to be brought out where the world can have a look at it. Yes, Rabbi, it's amazing. The collection you have here, Hebrew parchments from the early Middle Ages... manuscripts in the hands of Maimonides.
It is a very fine collection, I agree. And if you have looked long enough, Mr. Sutro, I would like to put them away again.
That's just it, Rabbi. I was hoping to persuade you to let me take them traveling.
And where to, Mr. Sutro? Not America.
Yes, America.
No. They belong here in Europe, those treasures, where they are loved, honored.
They have done their work in Europe. They should go now to the New World, which will be tomorrow.
In America, I would fear for them.
You have nothing to fear, Rabbi. From the beginning, America has been a land lit up by the Bible. And as these men have brought order into the wilderness, they will use books to bring order into themselves.
Well, Mr. Sutro, if they are really such men as you say...
Before Sutro had finished, he had brought to his city one of the greatest libraries of his time. 300,000 volumes, filled with the accumulated wisdom of all times and all lands. It was his fourth dimension, the structure of which he, the builder, was proudest, giving it to the people of the city,
so that they may build as high and as gloriously in the things of the Spirit as they have built in stone and mortar. For except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain who build it.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Benjamin H. Swig of San Francisco, member of the Board of Directors of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America and of the Board of Overseers of the University of Judaism in Los Angeles. Mr. Swig.
Adolf Sutro's greatness was evident not only in his creative imagination and tenacious ability to drive for accomplishment, but also in his concern and respect for the power of ideas. He built for the future, but drew his inspiration and mature judgment out of the tradition and experience of the past. Sutro's reaching out for what he called the building blocks of the fourth dimension represents his greatest contribution to his fellow man, for it was a contribution which helped to develop the soul and spirit of his neighbors. Books are the great repository of man's tradition and wisdom, also the recorded experience of his follies. Some volumes contain ideas which concern themselves with the major question of good and evil, right and wrong, life and death. One of the finest collections of such books, embracing philosophy, religion, ethics, and morality, can currently be found in the library of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today, the seminary library contains 200,000 printed volumes and over 10,000 manuscripts. It is the largest collection of books on Jewish subjects in the world today and the most extensive in the long history of the Jews. This library contains volumes in some 50 languages and reflects world history as well as the history of the Jews. The oldest item in the collection is a deed of sale written in Hebrew for a piece of property near Cairo. This transaction took place over 1,300 years ago. Many fragmentary evidences of ancient manuscripts, prayer books, and documents exist here. The largest in this collection comes from the Genizar of the Ezra Synagogue in Cairo. Ancient Jews, like those of today, had a high opinion of all written materials because learning to them has always been sacred. In ancient times, this respect for knowledge caused papers no longer in use to be placed in a special hiding place known as the Genizar. Altogether, the seminary's library is a unique and wonderful accomplishment, joining together religious and clerical scholarship, providing an indispensable vehicle through which past and present Jewish tradition can be studied, understood, and adapted to modern living. The drive for creative expression of men can best be seen as fulfilled in their concern for ensuring the continuity of man's wisdom and traditional learning. So, too, did Adolf Sutro contribute to the cultural heritage of his beloved San Francisco and bringing to his city one of the greatest libraries of that time.
Thank you, Mr. Swig. Eternal Light drama today, The Builder, was written by David Davidson. Today's program was the sixth in a series of 13 programs on American Jewish regional history, marking the 20th year of the Eternal Light program series. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Bob Reddick as Adolf Sutro and Jackson Beck as the narrator. Others were Grace Keddie, Martha Greenhouse, Carl Weber, Alan Manson, Maurice Tarplin, Jay Barney, and John D. Seymour. We invite you to join us next week when the Eternal Light presents His Excellency of Vilna, written by Irv Tunick, a special program in memory of the late Professor Louis Ginsberg. This is Jerry Damon. Our program was directed by Kenneth McGregor. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, currently marking its year of dedication. This is the NBC Radio Network.